Here is part 2 of 4.
As far as, like, movies and TV shows, I know you work quite a bit, and you're busy when you're not working even. What do you make time to watch?
On TV. I have to say, so the one thing that I am absolutely, is my guilty pleasure. I know my guilty pleasure is Survivor. And mostly because I love watching the interaction of people. And I get that, I know it's not real, but I do like watching just kind of how that social interaction, the right. social side of things with people. And then my newest one that I've really gotten on for, I was actually really surprised that I enjoy it so much, is the new Magnum PI.
Yes, I've really enjoyed that too. In fact, I like how there's just a teeny bit of sexual tension between Magnum and Higgins.
Yes, yes. And the fact, okay, I love the fact that they actually had Magnum be, like, it's, Magnum is still pretty much Magnum, but Higgins being a woman, I was like, nice twist. I love that plot twist from the original.
Right.
I think that that's great. I love the fact that, you know, of course, Higgins is still a British character, but a female, I was like, I liked it, and a badass.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
good
yeah.
job. I like this. Yeah,
I'm digging
really
that too.
I like that.
I love how they introduce his Hawaiian shirt. He didn't yeah. start off with it.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if at some point he's going to grow a mustache. And they're going to keep it, or they're just never going to even touch on that. Because that was a Tom Selleck thing.
Yeah, and I don't know that they will. And I was, you know, because I was a huge fan of the original Magnum.
Me too.
And Tom Selleck. I mean, who couldn't? And with the mustache. And just, you know, he played that character so well. So when I found out that they were doing a replay on that, I was kind of really dubious about,
yeah.
okay, how were they going to be able to play this off? And so... when they did pull it out, I was like, I watched the first one, and I was like, wow, this is really good. And so I did continue to watch that. I recorded the new Lethal Weapon as well, and I'm not really sold on it. I don't know. There's a couple of characters on there. I was just like, I've never watched any of the other ones, but I watched them. This year because they introduced Sean William Scott.
Right, and that's when I started watching it. I watched like the first two yeah. episodes of when it first premiered, and I did not like the guy who played the other part. Riggs, yeah.
Who played Riggs. Yeah, I didn't like... I never even watched the first one because I didn't like it. I was like, no, I'm not going to do it. But when I saw Sean William Scott on there as a replacement, you know... I thought, and I respect him. Like, I've seen a lot of the things that he's been in, the movies he's been in, and I've always enjoyed his comedic humor and
right.
how he's able to pull that off. So I was really looking forward to that. So,
right.
And I still will, but those aren't like when they come out, I record them and I watch them as soon as they come out. I actually have been waiting, you know, I'm like, one of these days I'll binge watch a bunch of those. But,
I will say that the current season after they introduced him has gotten so much better, mainly because
right.
his character is former CIA, and there's a little bit of kind of that thrown in with some of the storyline where
yeah.
he's having to deal
yeah.
with things from his past and really can't talk about it much, so he doesn't really say, oh, by the way, just in case, you know, he can't really do
right.
that. So
yeah. And I do. I appreciate that. I think I appreciate that part of it. And I can say that in the past, I would never watch movies or TV shows when they would first come out. I never watched them ever. I waited, like the Big Bang Theory, it was probably out 4 years before I started watching it.
Yeah.
And all the reruns, and I'm okay. Only because I never had TiVo or that ability to record stuff. And now, oh, geez, I love that stuff. I mean, I record shit all the time.
Right.
So that when I have a chance, I'll go down and watch it. You know, I don't miss any of that stuff.
You know what's funny is when TiVo was still fairly new, I lived in a house in Kirkland, and one of my roommates had a TiVo, and that's what introduced me to the whole concept of a DVR. And
I love it.
And it was when I was working at Earthlink, and
that's a blast from the past. Whoever yeah, heard of Earthlink,
right? And actually, it was right after Earthlink, but I was living with the people I worked with at Earthlink. And anyways, so when I was during that time, I had bought, because of how cool the TiVo was and how you could pause and rewind live television.
Oh yeah, I love it.
I bought one for my mom, and I also got her a coupon for the lifetime subscription for the service, so she could take that device to any you know, cable satellite company, whatever, and use it. It will work indefinitely. Although since then they've switched to digital, so that basically made the box, you know,
obsolete.
Yeah. I would have to pair it with another device to be able to. Yeah. Anyways, so I bought her the TiVo, and the sole reason for getting her the TiVo is because, shortly before that is when she discovered she had breast cancer, and she was going through treatments and stuff. And whenever I'd call her, she's like, "Hey, could you call back in like 10 minutes? I'm watching Survivor, or I'm watching, the American Idol show." And, you know, and yeah. I always call back the wrong time. And she's like, "No, and the commercial's already over. I'm back watching the show. I can't really talk right now." So for me, right. it was more of a, you know what, mom probably won't want to use this thing after I first get it to her. But once she figures out what this thing is capable of, she's going to love it. And I was right.
Yeah.
I bought it for her. She's like, "I'll never use it." Like Grandpa said about the VCR. Remember when somebody got Grandpa a VCR? He's, "I'll never use this," but he started using it. But yeah, I was so I did it for the purpose of being able to call her and talk to her without worrying about interrupting her shows, quote unquote.
Right. Right.
So
it's
yeah.
so funny. I mean, it's so funny to think about that. Like, how our lives were without that technology. I mean, you know, think about this. We're not even 50 yet, and we have watched remote controls, cordless phones,
right?
Cell phones,
right?
Car phones, being able to record live TV from a box without having to put a tape into it. I mean, the amount of advancement we've been able to see in the few years that we've been in existence.
Right.
On technology side, where when they first had the computers, it would fill a freaking entire city block, what now fits into the palm of your hand.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, that advancement is so, it's almost like eerie how astronomically advanced we've become in a very short amount of time.
And you know, there's a show that just started that they've only had like 3 episodes so far that I got sucked in right away on this show, is The Masked Singer. Have you seen that yet?
Oh my God, I was going to say, I've not watched the last one. By the way, episode 2, spoiler alert, I totally knew that was Tommy Chong. If you didn't know that was Tommy Chong, he has his voice. I don't care how you cover his face, you know his voice.
I kind of recognized it, and when what's her face said Cheech Marin, I was like, "Yeah, it's probably Tommy because Cheech's voice is different."
Yeah, Cheech, you hear the accent in Cheech's voice.
Yeah,
but Tommy Chong has that
very low.
He has the epitome of that, the stoner voice.
Hey man, yeah.
Yeah, that white man stoner voice. So it was.
That burnout sound, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. Right.
In fact, Tommy Chong's voice is kind of how I always imagined my cat would sound if he would speak English. Because he was such a laid back cat, he was just like, "Hey man, I can see the bottom of my dish, man. It's empty. Feed me." so hungry, man. Yeah. But yeah, no, I and when they first introduced the peacock, I was like, okay. The clues from that, I was like, Vegas, Singer. And of course they mask the speaking voice, but you can hear the singing voice, and if you're familiar with the person singing, you'll recognize their voice immediately. And everyone was saying Neil Patrick Harris and all these other people. I was like, no, dude, it's Donny Osmond.
Right.
It's fucking Donny Osmond. I'm sitting here watching this going, I'm yelling at the TV, it's Donny Osmond. What's right? wrong with you? And what's really funny is in the last episode, he even says, I was a teeny bopper. I'm like, fuck, I haven't heard that term in forever.
Oh,
and,
my God, right?
And none of the judges caught that. And none of them commented on that.
I think some of them may have already known, but they're just trying to play into it or something.
Playing the part, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I think they're kind of playing into it. But I think, you know, it is definitely I can't say that it's a unique, because it was actually, I think, China does that.
Yes.
Is where
yes.
they were a China show. But, I mean, it's unique to America. I mean, well, then again, well, hold on. So was American Idol.
American Idol started in the UK. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. And so did America's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, those aren't unique to America, despite the name. But I do like the map aspect of it. And there's a few of them that I was like trying to figure out who they are. And that it's not just singers, that it's other genres. Others, of
well, they just say, they say celebrities. They don't specify they're singers. They're
right,
celebrities.
Right.
It's like, did you know that Terry Bradshaw had a singing career? I had no clue.
What?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. No, I'm saying he shouldn't have one.
Yeah, yeah.
Ever.
Well, yeah. I mean, to be honest, when he sang a country song, I was like, that fits. Don't sing the other shit again. That was terrible.
Where did you see him at?
The Masked Singer.
Ah, okay.
Did I just ruin it for you? I'm sorry.
That was the third one that came out.
Yes.
Okay.
He was the one after Tommy.
Don't tell me what outfit he wore though.
I won't. Yeah, I mean,
you didn't quite run it.
Yeah, I think it's painfully obvious which one he is, but yeah, I won't say who it is.
Well. Then that's because I'm thinking that he's one that I haven't been introduced to yet, but it is kind of interesting to see some of these different, you know, you do want to know who is that person, and you know, some of the different clues and stuff, you're like, oh wow, that's interesting how they connect the dots, so that it's not just hearing them sing, but it's that those clues that they give you. And how closely can you connect the dots to those clues is actually
right.
pretty entertaining.
Right. And what was funny is when the episode with Tommy Chong, when she said Cheech, he pointed at her.
Yes.
He pointed at her like, you're close. You know. So yeah, no, that's probably I haven't really gotten into a reality show in forever, and this show hooked me right from the very beginning of that first episode.
I actually got hooked because there's a comedian that I have on my Facebook page, Chris Rodriguez, who he has moved out of the Seattle, Washington area to somewhere back east. So he was watching it 3 hours before it came out. It aired over here in our time zone.
Right.
And he's like, so he started posting, I think this character is this person. I think this character is this person. I think this character is this person. And so he kept posting that like every freaking 10 minutes after everybody. And I was like, damn it. So I had to look it up and go, which one is this shit from? I wasn't going to watch it. I wasn't going to watch it until he started posting that shit. And then I'm like, I'm going to have to watch this shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I didn't go back to take a look and see who he posted for the guy who got unmasked, the first one, the football player.
Yeah, I had no idea who he was. I had no idea who that guy was. But I knew he wasn't a singer or a rapper of any kind because he sucked.
Right? Yeah, yeah. There is that. There is that, definitely.
But I'm trying to think of... I think it was. She was a B, the woman who was... Yes. I think that's Diana Ross.
I think it's definitely... I don't think it was Diana Ross, but there is somebody else.
Or Dionne Warwick was the other option.
Yeah, yes, Dionne Warwick. I thought that was a good... Or... I don't think you're going to actually accidentally name the person who it actually is, but... Because they don't want to give it away, but because I think that, you know, like they came really close to the whole Tommy Chong thing, but they didn't say it was Tommy Chong.
Right.
They played around it, you know. And,
right.
So I think that they're going to, but it is definitely a soul singer.
Right. Well, and she said she had her career started in the 50s.
Right. Right. So,
so
it'll be interesting to kind of watch how this plays out. And it is, it's fun to have something so different and unique. And I like how they have, as somebody like myself, that is, you know, maybe as it has been, that there will be something, you know, potentially for the old has-beens once you reach the pinnacle.
Right.
I'm still trying to, I still, mind you, I'm still reaching for my pinnacle, but, you know.
You're looking forward to when you were like a third or fourth tier celebrity.
Oh hell, I'd be happy to be on the D list, you know, instead of the unknown list.
Oh dude,
you know,
I don't know if you'll ever be D list because you know you're funnier than Kathy Griffin, way funnier.
Thank you.
Oh my god. I had to actually unfollow her on Twitter because she engages like trolls like no other, and I'm like, dude, come on.
Yeah.
Why give the trolls that attention? What's wrong with you?
Well, and that's just that's somebody who's bored and doesn't have a, and I know a lot of people who are entertainers that are kind of. Snarky like that, real catty and shit.
Yeah.
That love to stir the pot, and they will make a mountain out of a molehill. And it's because the reality is that they're bored. They have nothing else going on in their lives, and for them, that's their life. They want to be able to have that interaction with people, and to relieve their boredom. And
it's any attention is good attention, as far as they're concerned.
Right. And I'm just not interested. I don't have the time. I have way too much going on in my life. I have, you know, besides work and going to, trying to get education and school and always trying to better myself and trying to level up on my entertainment and my comedy. And I don't have time for that crap. I don't do drama. That's the one thing. When I have people in my life who try to bring drama into my life, I sit them through very quickly. It's like, I understand that you have some things that you're going through in your life right now, but that sounds like a lot of drama to me, and I don't do drama.
Yeah. No, I know.
And I snip it quick and in a hurry. Don't bring that shit to my door.
Oh, I know.
And especially if you're in my fucking car and we are driving somewhere and it's going to take us 2 hours to get there, you are not going to spend 2 hours trying to ear rape me with your fucking drama. I will stop you quick and in a hurry. And to the point where I'm like, I will put your ass out to the side of the road right now.
You can walk home.
You just fuck how you get there and how you get involved, but you are not bringing that drama to my world because I don't have the patience for it. To me, it's ridiculous. It's petty. It's stupid.
Yeah.
And there's so much more that we could focus on that is important. And if you want to take that energy, how about you focus that energy on something positive to make a change, to make a difference either in your life or somebody else's life, instead of this whiny, snivelly crap that once you're done venting it out and booing it for 2 hours, nothing changed. There's no difference.
Right.
Including your attitude.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Done. Not going to do it. Nope.
And touching back on the whole depression thing, that's something I've been dealing with a lot this last couple months, and even in the last few days, I've caught myself like starting to type out some really just kind of, you know, kind of posts.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, all right, do I really want to hit post, or do I just delete it now after I've typed it all out? And that's what I've been doing.
Type it out, then delete it.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've been doing, is I'll type something out and think, I don't really need to send this out. They don't care.
Right.
They don't give a fuck.
It's not that, hold on, it's not that people don't care. That's not the point. The point is that you actually, that what you think about, what you focus on, you manifest. You attract.
Right,
and
exactly.
So
the secret.
If you are only putting out there negative shit,
it's all you're going to
get.
The
universe says,
negative.
I got lots of negative shit for you.
Yeah.
But instead, if you've got those negative thoughts and those negative attitudes coming around you, and you stop it, and you literally guillotine that thought, bloop, done. Not going to happen. Thanks for sharing. Moving on.
Right.
And you turn that, and you let those people, then a lot more positive things start happening. And I've been really, really focusing hard for you know, like a lot of people, their New Year is January 1st. For me, that's not the New Year. The New Year for me is September 25th. That's my birthday.
Yeah.
That's my New Year. That's my year. That's my New Year. That's the time that I
That makes sense,
on.
Actually.
Yeah, that's my New Year. I don't care about anybody else's New Year. This is my New Year. It's personal. It's mine. It's intimate. This is the time that I take to be introspective and reflect on my life and the path that I've taken and the direction I want to continue going.
Right.
And so I've been focusing really hard on my thought processes. It's very easy to be negative, and it's very easy to fall into depression, especially, you know, like with when you have that genetic history of it.
Right.
But for me, when those negative thoughts come banging on my door, bringing all their suitcase and their luggage with them, I'm like, stop. No, good. Turn around. You can get your ass back out in that semi and drive it down the road, because you're not parking here.
Right.
And then to try and find something positive to think about.
Right.
And just, if I want my momentum of all these great things that I've been blessed with in for my New Year that started again in September, for all these amazing blessings that I've been having lately, to keep perpetuating and moving forward and just snowballing in that positive direction, I have to welcome that positive stuff and not ignore the negative stuff, but acknowledge it and tell it to step aside. You're blocking the positive.
Right.
So you need to step aside, get back up on that curve, because the parade of positivity is coming through.
Right.
Get out of my way.
And you know what?
And keep that train going.
Yeah. And you know what? I think I initially got introduced to it like 4 or 5 years ago, but it really kind of started to really pay attention to it in the last couple of years. Is there's a documentary, there's also an audiobook which I've purchased called The Secret, and it talks about manifesting and just whatever you put out there, that's what you're going to get back. And if you've not seen it, I recommend it. It's on Netflix. And if you want the audiobook,
yes,
I can hook you up with that too. But
I did see that. And it's funny because of all the things, crazy things that my company has done, one of the greatest things that the company, my day job that I work for, they did was they put all their managers and high level executives and stuff into a training. It's not really a school, but it's a training, and it was opened by Lou Tice originally, who has passed on, but he was just amazingly brilliant, and he put together all the training material for what they call thought patterns for high performers, and it's through the Pacific Institute here in Seattle. And it's so funny because I've dealt, you know, we're here in the Pacific Northwest, and if people aren't familiar with the Pacific Northwest, about like a lot of the followers of the occult and of things of the pagan and druids and all that stuff, and manifesting and making, in fact, the school of Ross Mama or whatever is here, not too far from me, over here by Yelm. And they talk about being like casting spells and magic and all this sort of stuff. Well, the reality is that it's actually a science, and it's the science of the brain about things like sarcomas and the reticular activating systems and all that different stuff, how the brain works and how your brain really does not care if you're feeding it negative or positive. Your brain has you would think it does, but it doesn't have any vested interest in what the outcome is. You want negative, you want to be whiner. Oh, why does this always happen to me? My life is so bad. It's so miserable. Why does all these bad things always happen to me? And your brain goes, all right, and gives you all this bad shit. And it only focuses on bad shit that's going to cause bad things to happen in your life. Whereas if you go, God, I am so amazingly blessed. My life has, I have all these great things. Like, you know, for me, like one of the biggest, my goal is, this is something that I want to try and like always have out there, is I want to go do a UFO tour. That's my greatest goal in life. But all these different positive things that I think about, and then all of a sudden the brain goes, okay, you want positive things. Let's throw all this in, because that's what it filters out. Your brain will filter out things that doesn't give you what those end results. So when you focus on those really positive, it's so simple as when you're driving around in a city and you're looking for a place to park, and you tell you're like, okay, I need to find a parking spot. I need to find a good parking spot. And then all of a sudden, boop, that parking spot opens up and you're like, oh my God, that was amazing. That was like a miracle. I manifested that.
Right.
Well, yeah, you did manifest it because that was what you were focusing on. So your brain filtered out everything except looking for that parking spot. It's the same thing with where if you go, you know what, I'm going to buy, I decided my car's too crap and I'm going to go buy a new car. And then you go look at the newspaper and all of a sudden you see all these advertisements popping out at you for cars. And you're like, this is crazy. Look at all these cars that, you know, this is, it's like it's never been here before. No, they've always been there. But your brain you didn't need to know that. So your brain filtered them out because it didn't matter. But now all of a sudden you told your brain, I need a good deal on a good car. And your brain says, got you. And it sends up these it opens up those pathways to show you that stuff. It's that simple. It's science. It's not magic. It's science. And being able to train your brain on how to find that is kind of magical, because it takes a lot of work.
Right.
So when you learn how to do that, all of a sudden, all these crazy, amazing things start happening. I read something. Oh my God. I'm going to share this with you, Todd. I saw this. Andrew Rivers was talking about a comedian, and forgive me, I forget his name, that had posted on his Twitter account every day he did different tips, right? Well, one of the things that he gave a tip about was a Ralph Waldo Emerson post. And it was an article that he wrote. And I'm not sure if it was an article or if it was a book. And the comedian, the said unknown comedian said, do yourself a favor. If you haven't read it, read it. If you have already read it, go reread it, because it's that critical. And it was something that I was reading and it literally brought tears to my eyes because it was so beautiful. It was written in 1847. And one of the things that he wrote in there was that true genius is bringing to light other people's rejected ideas.
Yeah.
And that's true, especially when it comes to like comedy. You think about it, because when you try and bring something comedic to the stage, and the other thing I wanted to take a screenshot of it because I wanted to get the verbiage just right. It was talking about God doesn't give cowards the, it takes a strong person to bring these things, you know, to the genius or to light. Don't quote me. I got to review it. But it was and I love that because, like, as a stand-up comedian, I get told all the time, you know, oh, I would never have the nerve to be able to do what you do. I would never be able to do. Well, it takes courage to do that. It takes courage to get on that stage, and it takes courage to be able to share these thoughts, to put yourself out there to be rejected and ridiculed. but to be able to have that courage to stand up there with that conviction and say it anyways. And how it ties back to the rejected ideas is because when after I do a show and I get after the show and I have like the audience come up and talk to me afterwards and how they talk about how, oh my God, I think that same way, or I feel that same way, or I've done that, or I get that, you know, when you get that repeated as a thread from your audience, that tells you you're doing the right thing, that you're connecting with them because you have the courage to go talk about things that people are thinking about or experiencing, but they just didn't have the wherewithal just to talk about it themselves.
Right. And, you know, that's the thing is, in the last, I've lived over here now for just over 2 years. And in that time, I've made changes to my life, and for the most part, they've all been positive. I mean, I got diagnosed with sleep apnea, so now I have one of those machines that allows me to sleep a full 8 hours of sleep without waking up every 2 hours, which has made a huge difference. You know, I finally have been going to see a dentist and having my teeth cleaned and getting that taken care of, trying to keep my teeth from falling out kind of thing.
Huge.
But and these are things that the funny things to me, they're big things for me to do because I for a long time just didn't care, you know. And I'm realizing that these are things that are important and I should be worried about these things. And I think part of it was just like I was always so in the moment that I just never thought that far ahead on anything. So I didn't really care. It wasn't a thought that stayed in my head for very long. And that's kind of how I've always been. And, so I go therapy, you know, I do all these things to try to make positive changes in my life. And even though I'm doing these things and I'm making these changes, I'm still struggling with things. It's like this last couple of weeks, I've been in this terrible funk. I realized yesterday that I hadn't posted a podcast episode in almost 3 weeks.
Wow.
I was like, you know what? I need to record.
Yeah.
You know, I've been like focusing so much on what I don't have and that, you know, the things that I wish I had and not focusing on the things I do have and the things that I'm grateful for.
Yeah. And you know that I think it's really easy. Again, it's very easy to be negative and to focus on that. Being positive is a lot harder. It takes work. And the reason why it takes work is because the benefits far exceed being negative. It really does. When you stop and take a moment, and it's natural. We as humans, we have a tendency that we just fall into that negative because it's easier. And so our brain just naturally slides into it. But to be able to be positive and say, you know what? First of all, stop the haters, stop the negative voices that are going on inside my own head and tell them to step up on the curb because the parade's coming through.
Because you're fabulous.
Exactly. Hello. Do you see my freaking tiara? Hello, my crown. But, you know, look at me. I'm amazing. But, you know, to be able to not give a shit what anybody thinks, but not just anybody, but that negative thought in your head and tell it to get the fuck up on my curb because you got things to do. It takes work and it takes stopping that mindless chatter that goes on in your brain and to actually stop, pause, listen to it, and then change it. And as you start changing it, that becomes the new habit. To think positive and to be encouraging to your own self and to be your own cheerleaders becomes a habit so that when you have that strong core belief in yourself and the things that matter and that are important to you and the self-care and the self-love, that when you have that yourself, that right there is the shield against all the people that hate on you and say negative things. that's where, you know, you're able to go, wow, who's really the pathetic person in this situation?
Right.
You, because you are the one who, all you have is hatred and negativity. Guess what? I don't give a fuck what you think about me, because nothing you say to me is going to impact my life and how I live my life.
Right.
But what I say to myself and what I think about myself is everything.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm it. This is it. The older I get, the more I really have come to that dawning realization that like glass of ice water to the face. Oh my God, this is it. Like, there's no do-overs. This isn't a rehearsal. This isn't a practice. This is my life.
Right.
This is who I am. So if you're going to be negative influence, if you're going to say negative things or have bad things to bring to my table, I'm not going to entertain that. I'm not going to feed that. I'm not going to perpetuate that.
And
there's the door. Get out.
I totally get that. And, you know, and it's funny because I think this is going to be the year that I'm going to start like not giving a fuck about what negativity is thrown at me, and just kind of like, you know what, that's fine if you believe that, but I'm not me. And part of that is that there are people in my life that have always been negative, always. And
and
there are people that you can't really completely like cut them off, because family or whatever.
You will never be able to,
And but you know what? I now realize that no matter how much I care about that person, no matter how much I want to have a healthy relationship with that person, they're not capable.
Right.
And there's nothing I can do to change that.
Yeah, that's not your fault. It's not your fault, and it's nothing you have any controlling measure of.
Exactly.
The only thing you can control is your reaction to that, and say, you know what, I wish it was this way. It's not going to be, but moving on.
Right.
And I'm okay with that. I'm okay. I don't let that get to me as much as, you know, like when I find it really interesting that I have a lot of people in my life that are my age range, right? When you're around that 50-year-old, when you're at that half of that tree kind of mark, right?
Right.
And you get really introspective. And I think it's really interesting how so many people get depressed and upset about how they've aged, how they look old, they've put on weight, they're wrinkly, whatever, you know, like their physical appearance and their ability is not what it used to be.
Right.
And so they get really depressed and they get really down on themselves and they have a hard time with that. And I don't have that.
Right.
I'm the exact opposite. I love it. I embrace all the different changes that have happened in not just my body, but in my mind as well.
Right.
Because this is something I didn't have this awareness and this awakening when I was a young person. I was in my 20s. I was oblivious to all this. And now that I'm older, I'm looking at things in my world and I'm like, I wasn't ever like some kind of football star, wrestling star, track star, anything like that in high school. I wasn't some cheerleader. I was not any this gorgeous person that people fucking flaunted and wanted like high kind of super popular. I was never super popular. I was never at one place long enough to be popular, right? And so, to me, I don't look in the rearview mirror. I don't stare in that rearview mirror lamenting all those things in my glory days.
Right.
This is my glory days.
Have you gone to any of your high school reunions?
I actually did. This year, this last year, in September, I went to my 30th high school reunion. Keeping in mind that I'd never been to any of my high school reunions. And I walked into that place knowing that I was not going to know a single soul, because I was never there. I didn't know a single solitary soul. Nobody that showed up was anybody that I knew. And I actually I had a great time. I was just over the top me.
Right.
And so, of course, I was promoting myself as a comedian type thing, so I was way over the top, as you know, just, you know, like as a performer,
yeah,
you're either on or you're just yourself. You're relaxing when you're calm and you're relaxing and just being normal. Then you're quote unquote on. And
right.
So when I was at my reunion, I was on. And I was looking at the yearbook, and the president of our school, of our year, whatever, our class, and class president, I guess, him and somebody else, and obviously he was some football star, and Todd, who's past his prime. I mean, it's not like he's got, horribly out of shape or anything, but he was past his prime for sure. And you could tell that his life reflected that, and married some girl from high school or something. And he was definitely, basking in past glories at the reunion. Didn't know me from Adam, right?
He's pulling a full Al Bundy, right? You're like talking about the
yes,
four touchdowns,
yes,
and all that.
Yes, yes. And yeah. So, basking in the glory of his glory days, and so the memories of those glory days. And I'm sitting there, and I'm looking at the yearbook, and they had a yearbook for us to sign the yearbook from the pages. And I see myself clearly. I'm like, I was in the very front, and I was not like at any point in my life I ever blended. I've always stood out. I'm 5'10". I'm a big ass hairy Amazon. I fucking stand out in any crowd. I'm used to it. And so I went to go sign it, and he goes, oh, and him and some other goes, oh, we thought that was what's her face.
What?
And I go, clearly, I said, I know who I am. I'm not what's her face. My name is Marianne Riley, and that's me. I said, I thought for sure that was what's her face. I said, Todd, what makes you think I don't recognize myself? I said, if you take a look at the picture, I said, I was wearing the gray cowboy boots. I remember them specifically. I'm wearing the gray jeans and the blue and white shirt. I bought that shit. I know who I am. I was so just irritated. And it really kind of disgruntled me towards the end of the reunion. And I thought, I have a choice. I can walk away from this 30-year reunion being pissed off about this ignorant fuck calling me what's-her-face. Like, what, all the fat white chicks look alike? Anyways, I was so irritated with it. And I thought, you know what? I'm not going to let this die, because clearly this tells me this is somebody who, once we walk out of here, he becomes a nobody again. He's not that high school football star anymore.
Right.
But I'm still going to be me. I'm still going to be the entertainer who is striving and pushing and just driven to succeed at what I do. Not just on the entertainment side, but in my professional life too. And I'm living my best life, because this is my freaking 2000. This is my 50 year. Again, that was the beginning, and that was in that beginning of my year, new year for my 50 year.
Right.
And so I walked out of there, and the one person I hung out with the whole time, she was an older chick who was dating one of the guys who was in a band. And her and I became friends. And so the two of us, we totally were misfits. We didn't fit into any of this group of people.
Okay.
And I was laughing and loving it.
Did you say band as in like music, or a van as in like down by the river?
Band as in like he's a drummer.
Oh, okay, band. Okay. I'm just making sure I heard correctly.
Yeah. And so she was really cool. She was a lot of fun. And so to me, it was just, I laughed my ass off the whole time. Not one of these, I photobombed everybody. I jumped in there. I was laughing. I had them all just dying. I was cracking jokes and stuff. And,
right.
I had a great time. And I know I was laughing because, in a way I was looking at it, I was like, I kind of felt sorry for these people who they felt like, they'd already cocked up their toes and they are already half a body into the grave.
Right.
And like, they've already lived their best life. And like, it's way behind them. And they're just like empty nesters and all this other shit. And I'm like, I'm living my best life right now.
Right.
And embracing everything that is coming my direction, because it's been so, that's just that positive forward movement and that momentum. And it's been, so for me, it was definitely an interesting experience. I had a great time. I didn't think I would.
You know, I didn't go to my 10-year reunion because, like, all the people that had RSVP'd were names that I did not recognize. And they didn't have, like, photos next to the name, so I couldn't say, oh, I recognize that person from the, you know, walking down the hallway or some shit. But I did go to part of my 20th, you know, reunion. And when I went there, I found two or three people that I remembered from school and actually had in classes and stuff. And one of them walks up to me and goes, hey, Todd, how you doing? You know, what you been up to? I was like, oh, you know, just, you know, working and living and whatever else. He's like, you have any kids? You know, blah, blah, blah. No kids, not married. Wait, you're not married? You have no kids? How did you make it to past 40 and have no kids and not married? He's like, well, hello, I'm a nerd. You know, I'm the classic, like, well, I always pictured myself as the classic, like, 80s nerd. I was the kid who had the Spock haircut. I was the kid whose favorite band was Weird Al, and, you know, who looked like Screech, basically, without, you know.
Yes. Screech with a Spock haircut. That definitely describes you.
Yeah, yeah. And that was me. And it's like, and that look really kind of stayed with me for a long time. And I had other things going on that I just wasn't into, like, wanting to have kids. And so that never happened. I mean, you know, I'm still fairly young, I guess. I suppose if I find the right person, that still might happen. But I'll be old as fuck when they graduate. So,
yeah.
So probably not going to happen,
well,
which is fine.
You're a man. You're a man, so you can still do that, you know.
Yeah,
women, we don't have that option to us. We have to get things done. But, you know, I would have to say that, you know, yes, in your defense, back then we didn't have social media and dating websites like we do now that we could easily search through millions of people to find people that were into the same things that we're into and have that same kind of connection.
Right.
So it's definitely a new frontier, but
you know, on the whole, like, dating site thing, the problem I've been running into in the last however many months I've been, like, browsing just because I get bored sometimes. I don't actively look for somebody, and I haven't really had too much communication with people. And the few that I have all been, like, scammers of some sort. Hey, go to this website and look at my pictures. And oh no, I'm not spending money on that bullshit. If I want to look at porn, there's plenty of places I can get it for free.
Right. Exactly.
Why would I give it to you?
Pornhub.
You know, and
thank you, Pornhub.
Yeah.
Although
yeah.
Cue ball to a new conversation. By the way, it's very hilarious when your child, your 23-year-old child, your 23-year-old son, asked to borrow your phone because he wanted to go look at some Pokemon shit and opened up my browser and found that the last thing I was looking at was Pornhub.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
God, his face was hilarious.
Oh, I bet.
He almost gave me back the phone. It was like, you could see that debate on his face of how bad do I want to borrow the phone to go do some Pokemon hunting.
That's so funny.
It was so dirty. My mom was watching, my mother was watching Pornhub on her phone.
It's funny. It's funny to bring up Pokemon and Pornhub because somebody posted just a couple days ago that there was it was like a 3-cell comic strip. And the first one was like, honey, what is this $100 charge on the phone bill? And at the bottom it says Pokemon Go. He's like, it was porn!
That's funny.
And $100 charge for, like, a digital item that you can't physically touch or own. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. I thought that was fucking hilarious. But
trust me, as a mom, I've been, like, thinking, child, put down the fucking phone, get rid of Pokemon, go find yourself some good cookie, and go Go get laid, kids. Stop nerding out. Stop nerding out and watch. And like, I know it's pot calling kettle black.
Put Stop down the blunt out. And the video games and go find yourself a woman. That's
go chase and tail. You're 23. Go chase and tail. Go get laid.
You know, and what's for me? What's irritating about that is he's a good looking dude, and he could probably land any number of good looking women.
Oh yeah,
I have less totally to work can. With.
No, he's Abercrombie Finch.
Oh, too. Don't yeah, and yeah, yeah.
He totally could, and yeah. He like, I'm like, oh my god, kid, you're at the prime of your life. You should be out there just like. Girls would be paying him money to be with him.
Yeah, he is a fedora and a skinny tie away from being a hipster.
Yeah, he really is. He really is.
Granted, you know, I'm only teasing. He's family. He's your son. I love you guys, but yeah.
Oh yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
yeah, right.
And then how was it? I announced on my personal Facebook that I've been thinking about getting back into doing stand up again, and you were like yes. one of many people who are like yes do. I'm like oh shit okay. I'm like
yeah.
You know, and I got back on the Facebook group with the list of open mics.
Oh,
and
did they accept you? Did they get back to you and put you on there?
I didn't get a notification, but I was in there. So,
oh, good. Well, so, because you know, and a lot of that is that, you know, because I posted for you to put you back on there. I added you to the group.
Oh, you did? So. Okay. I didn't know if I did add
you to the group.
I didn't know if you had, so I reached out to somebody else as well. Said, "Hey," because I wasn't sure if you were able to do it, and he said he, you know, put it in there too. And I'm like, "Okay, cool." And then like,
oh, who did? Just out of curiosity, who?
I asked Silas because he's one of the few he's one of the few comedians in the area that I see all the time on Messenger.
Right.
He's only the only one. I mean, everybody else that I know that's a comedian is never on Messenger.
So,
and that's the only reason why I even asked Silas, to be honest. And he's a nice enough dude.
And that's fine.
But
and that's fine because yeah. Between either one of us, because the longevity of how long you know of us being in this community, they should have accepted that.
Right.
So,
yeah. Yeah. And honestly, and you were the one who probably got me on there. I hadn't checked in like 3 or 4 days. So. I went to look to see if I had been added, you know, and sure enough, there I was. I didn't get any notification, so I just assumed that it still was pending. So.
Yeah, they don't really notify you. You just have to go look. And the thing is that, to me, if you really, 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 really want to embrace that I don't give a fuck what anybody thinks about me, go be a comedian.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's you have to have a very thick skin. You,
yeah.
I cannot even tell you. And I think that we've had this conversation.
Oh, yeah.
Even up to a few months ago, within the last 6 months, I was like, I was ready to hang up my microphone. I'm like, fuck this thing. I'm so done with this bullshit. So sick and tired of people always judging me and always being so mean and blah, blah, blah. I'm so tired. I can't do this anymore. I can't keep getting my freaking dick knocked in the dirt and getting rejected. And all of a sudden the phone, ring. Hey man, we're doing a gig. You want some time? Hell yes, I am. Every time.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is I go to quit.
You're like, yeah, and you're so funny, and you've always been funny. For as long as I can remember, you've always been a performer. Yeah. Always. You're always a ham. You're always good for a laugh. And I know that I can't count the last time me and you have had a conversation less than an hour on the phone.
No.
You know, it just doesn't happen.
Have.
No, it hasn't.
I don't think we do.
In fact, every time I come to visit your house, we spend hours just chatting, you know, just in whatever is on
and
the mind.
And just,
oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So and I looked on the open mic list and all of it is Pierce and King County. There's nothing on there for Kitsap. Yeah. So
you know, they do have stuff in Kitsap, but Kitsap for whatever reason hasn't posted their stuff. So there's a lot happening at KISSCAP. There's like Cookies Barn Grill. I know that's still going on.
Okay.
And there's a lot of different people that are happening over in that area. Cookies is a great place. As far as, like, it's consistent, it's always there. Horrible crowd. It's hell to get them. And that is actually, in a lot of ways, it's a really good thing. If you want to build your chops, you do it at some place like a bar where you have a different crowd all the time.
Right.
And you have to work. You have to compete with a pool table, probably dartboard.
The game on TV, yeah.
And people getting drunk and trying to get laid.
Yep.
And if you can bring that crowd in, then when you go to something like a comedy club where everybody's sitting down, butts in seat, and they're there to behave and watch a comedy show,
right?
That's easy pickings. That's easy stuff.
And you know what? From what I remember, and I think I did at most like 6 or 7 open mics when I tried the last time. The one that got the best response was the open mic I did at the Seattle Underground, and that was the first one I did.
Yes.
And I had the best response to all my jokes there, and I think it was because I had like 10 people that were my friends there, and I think the other half of the people that didn't laugh were not my friends. I think part of it is that I recently listened to the audiobook The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, which is an awesome book, and watching that show Crashed, I think is what it's called. And it's on HBO. It's a Judd Apatow production. That's the guy who did like Freaks and Geeks and 40-Year-Old Virgin and Knocked Up and all those movies.
Oh yeah.
And it has Pete Holmes. And Pete Holmes is one of those comedians that I didn't get why people thought he was funny. I thought he was just a bit of a dork. And then I'm watching this going, okay, it's got Pete Holmes. How good can it be? And I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh, my God, he actually is funny. And he's one of the writers on the show, so it's not him doing somebody else's material. I guess a lot of the stuff that's in the show is based on things that actually happened. So there's going to be the Hollywood embellishment that makes it funnier or more interesting and stuff. But at the end of every episode, they kind of have a clip of him talking about the things that happened in that episode, that how they happened in the real world, and how they changed it and how they made it funnier. And I started to appreciate the guy's humor a little bit more, just because I had a little bit of background on this guy. He always seemed like he was not the first few times I saw him, he was doing like impressions, and the impressions were terrible. I couldn't tell if he was doing it on purpose or if it was just that he was just that bad or what the deal was. Turns out that's part of his comedy. He does these terrible impressions, and they're funny because they're terrible, apparently.
Right.
So, and some of them actually were pretty good. It was just that It's one of those situations where the joke is run into the ground to the point where it comes back to being funny again.
Okay, yeah.
But for me, sometimes I can't get past that first hump where it's being run into the ground. I'm like, all right, enough already with this. And then it comes back being funny the second time. I'm like, okay, well, I can see why you kept going. But really.
Right.
So...
Right.
Watching that show kind of also started making me think about, you know, things, and you know, if this guy doesn't give up and he is as dorky as he looks, and he's now on HBO.
Right. Right, and that's the thing, it's about perseverance.
And perception too. You know?
And you know, a lot of people, like, not everybody has my sense of humor. Not everybody understands or can appreciate the things that I say. Some people find it very offensive.
Yeah.
And
I have that same problem.
I'm okay with that because if only 10% of the population loves you or likes you, that's still over what? a million people.
Yeah. And that explains,
well over a million.
That explains like Russell Brand and Dane Cook.
Liza Lampanelli.
Oh yeah, Lisa Lampanelli. And you know
Lisa,
what?
Lisa, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Lisa Lampanelli.
If it hadn't been for those celebrity roasts, I would have never known who she was, and I would have probably never seen her stand up because, you know, I would have heard one of her jokes and thought, no, she's stupid, no. But yeah,
yeah,
she's...
yeah.
But yeah,
Lisa Lampanelli is I mean, like, I can be. I'm not that level of offensive. But,
no, you don't. You don't go. You don't go for the jugular with the offensive comedy. No.
No, that's not my gig at all. But the thing is that she has like a cult following. She has a lot of people that love her, and I actually watched one of her specials. Oh, sorry. And I could see some of it. I actually found funny. I would say that there was a good portion of it that I thought was funny. And I could, the other stuff, I could see where other people would find it funny.
Right.
Right? And again, stop and think about it. She has a huge cult following. She has a lot of people that think she's incredibly funny, even with her being that offensive and stuff. So
Right. When
you think, oh, that's your self-doubt, you've got to kick that shit to the curb. You got to get, that inner dialogue that I was telling you about.
Right.
You got to let that shit go. Step on the curb. The parade is coming through. Get out of my way.
Right.
Okay. Because if you let that self-doubt get to you, at the end of the day, end of life, when you're laying there in your deathbed going, woulda, shoulda, coulda, it's too fucking late.
Right.
Right? And you need to, you know, you have to want that with a passion that's more important. It's not about becoming famous, but it's about doing something that you love, that makes you happy. Who gives a shit what anybody else thinks?
Right.
And there's like some of the greatest comics that I know who are huge headliners that are touring all over the place. They ate a big old bag of dick for the first 6 months or longer.
Yeah.
And that was with them doing 3, 4, 5 shows a week.
Right. This is not for me, it was because I was getting, it was just left and right, and it was from people that, and it was also from people who initially said, oh dude, you can totally do this, you're funny. It was when the people who initially said you're funny, you can do this, started saying, dude, shut up, you're not funny. That's
okay, well,
when I was like, all right, well, maybe there's some truth to it. And you know,
no,
what? I have enough other things going on in my life. I don't really need this right now. And then it was another thing, too.
Well, because it's scary and it's intimidating and it takes you out of your comfort trap. I don't call it comfort zone. I call it your comfort trap.
Right.
It takes time and hard work. And that's why I kept telling you, don't give up. You have to continually go out there and keep reworking your craft and write it down, try it out. If it doesn't quite work, then go back and reword things, manipulate, massage, change things until it does.
Right.
Because it's not something that instant gratification. This is not freaking Jack in the Box. It's not an instant gratification. You don't get to go through the fucking drive through and be able to have everything. You know, it doesn't work like that. You have to, it's more of like, it's a marathon. Not a sprint.
Right.
You have to pace yourself and keep going and keep going through those difficult spots where people will tell you that you're not funny. You're right. Not everything's going to be funny. But anytime I coach new comics that are getting on stage for the first time, I try and get rid of that misnomer right away. First of all, your first 10 times getting on stage, your first 10 times, you're not trying to get a laugh. It has nothing to do about getting a laugh.
Right.
If you get a laugh, that's a bonus. That's icing on the cake. But it's not about being funny. It's not about getting a laugh. When you are getting on stage for the first 10, 15, 20 times, it's about trying to get comfortable, about knowing your stage positioning, about being able to grab the microphone out of the microphone stand and move the microphone stand out of your way.
Right.
How to hold that microphone, how to deal with the lights that are glaring in your eyes, and to be able to move and be able to say and to be able to stay within, okay, I've got 3 minutes, so I'm going to say some stuff on the microphone. I'm going to learn how to be able to vocalize so I'm not quiet as hell. But be able to be loud, and so that, you know, even in a bar where it's packed and people are being really loud.
I have no problems projecting. You know that.
Right. But you don't when you're not. But when you get on stage, it's being able to carry that over and remind yourself that, okay. And when you walk into a place and you're looking at the first thing you do, hopefully you're not the first one on stage, because you get a chance to look at, read the crowd, what kind of people are here, who's here, and then where's the lighting at? When I'm watching somebody on stage, where's the lighting at? Where's the best lighting? How is the microphone set up? Because if they have it really quiet and people, because a lot of times I watch a lot of people get on stage and they're funny, but they're really quiet.
But you can't hear them, yeah.
And what happens is your audience, you've got them when you first, for the first 15 seconds when you get on that stage. Within 30 seconds, if they're still straining to listen to you and hear what you're saying, that's work. They're not there to work. They're done. Right. They're there to be entertained, to have fun. They're not going to listen to you. They'll just tune you out. It's not because you're not funny. It's because your crowd can't hear you.
Right.
The audience doesn't hear. I would rather be too loud. And I, trust me, I am too loud. There's times people are like, oh my God.
There was a couple times where I heard you over the PA system.
Yeah.
And I think that's something I'll probably have to deal with too, because I know my voice carries.
Yes, and I'm okay with that. I am used to, I do that deliberately.
Yeah.
Because I know how loud things can get. And so I push really hard to be loud because it gets their attention. And if I have to, I'll adjust down from there.
Right.
But I've been in rooms where I've watched people go up and they were really funny, but they were new to being comics, and especially like new in a bar as opposed to a comedy club.
Right. And that was the thing that I noticed when I started doing like open mics at bars, that I realized how difficult it was to try to tell jokes when clearly no one's listening.
Nope. They don't care. You've got to suck them in quick and in a hurry. And as new people, that's why I said, if you really want to get your chops, if you really want to advance yourself quick and in a hurry, don't do a fucking comedy club where it's easy. Go to a bar where it takes work.
Right.
And because when you're loud and you're able to hook them, they're going to listen to you for the first 15 seconds. You better make them laugh in that first 15 seconds. Then you got their attention.
Right.
Now you've got to keep their attention for however long you're on stage.
Yeah.
And that is something that I don't have a problem with that now, because I've been doing this for a long time. And I'm very comfortable when I'm on stage.
Right.
And I don't care what the environment is. I try and find something that I can play off of that environment within the first 15 seconds that I can suck in my crowd. And once I've got them, now that I have your attention, you think I'm funny. Now they're like, okay, that was good. Where are you going to go from there? Now I need to follow it up with something funny, and then follow that up with something funny. And, you know, you can sag a little bit in the middle of your set, but you better be strong, open strong, and end strong.
And close strong, yeah. Yeah.
But that takes time and practice, and being able, not every joke is a winner. So you take it out there and no matter how much you love that joke, if you take it out three different times and it fails three different times, retire that, get it out of there.
Yeah.
Get it, take it back, rework it, or maybe put it in the back of the closet and wait for a while, and then you can bring it back out and revisit it. And I've done that with a lot of jokes that I've written years ago that just didn't work, and I had to wait until something else, and I was like, oh my God, that's brilliant. And I can tie that into this, which ties into this. And then all of a sudden I take something that was a 30-second concept and now all of a sudden it's a 5-minute show.
Right. I've actually started writing down things again. I have been doing that for like the past couple of weeks. Just random thoughts that I found amusing, and I wrote them down, thinking at some point I'll probably turn it into some sort of joke or something. I've seen you work on jokes, and I've seen the evolution of a joke from the conception to a finally polished, joke. And I've seen how much better it is when you're done than from when you started, yeah. Even though it was really funny when you started. So,
and they're never done. That's the brilliance. The brilliance of these things is that they're never, ever completely done, because they're always, no matter how good they are, they can always evolve.
Right.
And have more taglines added to them, other things added, other things put onto them, and just make them like a, they're always like this living document that is something that you can always keep changing and adding and making it more true. And it's good, because that keeps something from ever becoming stale. And it gets to the point where if you stand on stage and go, oh, my God, I have to tell these same sorry-ass jokes I've been telling forever, and I'm so bored. Well, if you're bored with it, guess what? You're going to be – your perception when you take it on stage, you're presenting it as bored. And everybody else is going to – they've never heard it, but it's fucking boring to them already.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And that's how you reinvigorate things and keep it fresh, is that, you keep adding and just – It's fun.
You know,
I love doing it.
You know, it's funny. I've been watching. The other thing is I've been watching a lot of stand up on Netflix too.
Tune in next week to hear the next part of the interview.